You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7. Good morning. I'm Mark Purcell. This year marks the 100th anniversary of the founding of the National Parks Service, and National Geographic has launched a year-long exploration of the power of parks. And part of that exploration is the 8th edition of the National Geographic Guide to National Parks of the United States, as well as their kids' version of National Parks Guide USA. To talk about the books and National Geographic and our national parks, it gives me great pleasure to welcome geologist, journalist, and educator Ford Cochran, who's Director of Programming for National Geographic Expeditions. Ford, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you so much, Mark. I'm thrilled to be here.
As I was looking at your bio before we talk about the books, I see you spent some time at the University of Kentucky.
Darn straight. I was a professor right down the road from you all. Of course, loved getting up to Cincinnati and enjoying the city nearby and your good Cincinnati chili and all the rest. But I was a professor of geology right down the road in Lexington at UK, and loved getting over to one of my favorite places, which is not a long drive from you all, which is Mammoth Cave National Park, the world's longest cave, more than 400 miles of map passages and still going. They don't know how long that cave is. They find more on mapping expeditions every month when people come to the cave to push the boundaries.
So our National Park Service established 100 years ago, and the National Geographic Society right there with it. Talk about how they are intertwined and have been for almost a century now.
At National Geographic, of course, we love the world's, you know, wild wonders, natural places, wildlife, cultural and historical destinations. And, of course, that's what the National Park Service is all about. Way back at the very beginning, when we had a handful of national parks, but we didn't have a National Park Service to take care of them, and there was a businessman by the name of Stephen Mather. He's best known, perhaps, before he went on to do what he did with parks, for 20 Mule Team Borax, if you remember that brand.
Yes.
He worked out in Death Valley, the desert southwest, and made a fortune for himself but fell in love with the wilds of this country. And he decided there needed to be a National Park Service, so he invited a bunch of folks he thought could help to influence people. One of them was Gil Grosvenor. He was the editor and president of National Geographic for more than 50 years, just a defining figure in National Geographic's history. Mather hosted what was called the Mather Mountain Party, took a bunch of folks out into the redwood trees, into the sequoias in the Sierra Nevada. They spent several days there, and he said, look, let's work together and make this National Park Service come into being. Let's make the case. And Grosvenor just completely bought in. He came back. He told his staff to get to work. That was 1915. And in April of 1916, released a full issue of National Geographic magazine dedicated to what they called the land of the best. These extraordinary places are national parks. And later that year, the legislation passed to create the U.S. National Park Service. And it was, you know, signed into law. So now for a century, we've had a park service. The park service has grown. Now, so there are 59 full-fledged national parks, the legislation passed by Congress, signed by the president, to make the parks, as well as national seashores and lakeshores, historic sites, national trails, national monuments, just a whole multitude of different kinds of parks now for us to enjoy.
A lot of folks know it was Teddy Roosevelt who made a big push, an outdoorsman who loved the wide expanses out west. And he was the one that kind of got the ball rolling. Let's go back to the start of the national parks themselves, to the world's first national park, and that was Yellowstone. And as I was reading the guide here, to find out, it was founded in 1872.
That's right. And it was kind of an accident of history that it became a national park. You know, there was no state of Wyoming at that point. There was just this land, so no one to administer it. There was actually a park that's now a national park that had been set aside by Congress, signed into law by Abraham Lincoln. Even earlier than Yellowstone, that was Yosemite, but it was a California state park. Yellowstone became the world's first national park, and now this notion of national parks has been called America's best idea. In countries around the world, you can go to national parks. We came up with that, can take pride in the concept of setting aside really extraordinary places such as Yellowstone for us to enjoy, for our kids to enjoy in posterity forever.
Ford Cochran is Director of Programming for National Geographic Expeditions. We're talking about National Geographic's Guide to National Parks of the United States, the 8th edition, out in time to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service here in the USA. And I love the billing here. From Acadia to Zion is included here in the National Parks Guide, Ford, and you move from east to west as you progress through the book, and I love how it starts with Acadia, right in the beginning, that beautiful spot in Maine.
That's right. And it's, you know, for a long time, and, you know, the earliest days, there were just these big grand monumental parks out west. You know, folks began to recognize, boy, we have some extraordinary sites back east that are well worthy of preservation, too. Plus, a lot of people who need a place to go, a sanctuary, not just for wildlife, but for people in a busy world, lots of us living in cities, lots of roads, lots of tall buildings. You need a place to retreat, a place to get away and sort of find yourself. And so a subsequent generation began to dedicate parks in the east. You know, a few wealthy patrons became very important in setting aside that land in coastal Maine. You imagine this is right around Bar Harbor, which was a retreat for the wealthy. It might have simply been a private enclave that only a very privileged few could enjoy. But a couple of visionaries ultimately decided, you know, let's purchase this land. Let's set this aside for the people. And so now we have, you know, parks like Shenandoah, not far from where I live, the Great Smoky Mountains, and, of course, Cuyahoga Valley right there in Ohio.
Indeed, the national parks spread across the country. But I did notice on the map in the front of the guide, Ford, that I think I only counted 10 or 11 parks east of the Mississippi. Of those 59 national parks, most of them are out in that wild wilderness of the West.
It's really an extraordinary thing. I'm so fortunate, I think, in the career that I've had. I've worked for the Geographic for almost 25 years. And I've had the privilege of traveling all sorts of places around the world. But there is no place I love more than the national parks of the United States. I mean, these places are just jaw-dropping and spectacular, the scale. I mean, obviously, we know places like the Grand Canyon and Yosemite and Yellowstone. But there are so many other wonders in the parks. I mean, you go to Colorado, and there's like Great Sand Dunes National Park, mm-hmm. where you've got a dune field. Dunes, you know, the size of something you find in the Sahara Desert. And if you want, the Park Service lets you do it. You can rent not a snowboard, it's a sandboard, and you can sandboard your way down those dunes like you were surfing a wave. Where are you going to get to do something like that? Or these incredible cave parks where you can get down on your hands and knees and explore the way that, you know, ancient people explored in the caves with torches. Cavers go and explore with headlamps and hard hats and all that, knee pads. And you can do the same thing, have that experience. Or you can go climb the tallest mountain in North America up in Alaska. Or you go out to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, you can see brand new land being formed before your eyes. If you get out there, get to the Big Island, and then go at night and hike out, you'll see what they call skylights, little tiny breaks in the lava flows where you can see the hot lava underneath. It pulses this orange glowing light, and it flickers. I always thought of like the campfires of a great army. This must have been what it looked like during the Civil War when the armies pitched their camps. It's just an unbelievable thing to see.
Ford Cochran, he is Director of Programming for National Geographic Expeditions, talking about the National Geographic Guide to National Parks of the United States, now out in its 8th edition. You can learn more about it at WVXU.org. And this is the best-selling National Parks Guide and has been what it was first printed in 1989. What have you changed and what has been added to this 8th edition in time for the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service?
We've known for years this was coming. The Geographic, believe it or not, I sat in meetings 10 years ago when we talked about 2016 and what we were going to do for the centennial. So we've been working a long time on these. And we decided we wanted to rewrite this book from cover to cover, more than 300 new photographs, new maps, lots of new information up about the parks, lots of sidebars, historical information, and so on. And then the kids' guide has all these fantastic activities and ideas. Of course, the parks, they're set aside. But what does that mean? You know, what does it mean to say this is dedicated as a national park? Yosemite had been set aside as a national park, but not too long after it was founded, there was a big sort of hue and cry about, we need more water. The San Francisco earthquake came in 1906, the great earthquake. Folks said, boy, if we'd had more water, we might have been able to fight those fires better. And so let's dam one of the valleys in Yosemite National Park, the Hetch Hetchy Valley. Let's dam that and make a reservoir there. And they did. And it sparked this huge controversy. Some people said, it's nature. We are protecting it. We're preserving it. And others said, no, it's too important. We need to do this. So the parks are really only as protected as every generation chooses to make them. So one of the best things you can do with your kids, if you love the parks and you love nature, is to get your kids out into the parks and develop that appreciation for it early so that they can become champions and raise their own kids in the same tradition.
You had obviously a lot of work going into this guide. Just some of the details are incredible. Of course, with National Geographic, always loved the maps there, Ford, and the photographs. But a lot of good information when you want to visit this place, where you can stay, where you can't stay. And it really covers almost everything.
Yeah, I always feel like, you know, when I get out to a place, I'm sort of like, when will I get back? I don't know if I'll make it back here. I want to see as much as I can. And so we included, of course, there are 59 big, fully designated national parks. Congress passed a bill, the president signed it into law, set them aside. But there are more than 400 places that are protected by the National Park Service. All these different kinds of things, the lakeshores, the seashores, the monuments, the historical sites. And so we include bunches of those. Whenever we describe a park, we talk about places nearby. State parks, too, because not every wonder is a national park. Niagara Falls is one of the great wonders of our country. But it's protected as a state park instead of a national park. So, you know, it's we really wanted to show people when they get to a place, there's more to explore. There's always more to see, more to do.
A lot of that information in the new guide relates to the parks and how you use them. And I love how it is paralleled in the National Geographic Kids National Parks Guide USA, because those activities, as you said, trying to spark that interest in the outdoors, this guide for the kids in the Centennial Edition has a lot of great things for fertile young minds to digest.
Well, that's right. You know, I've taken my kids out to national parks on a whole bunch of different trips. And these are just our best family memories. These have been our most extraordinary experiences. When I was a kid, I was so fortunate because I had some neighbors who actually invited me along with their family. They had four kids of their own. They brought one more, me, in a Winnebago, an RV. We went all the way across the country from Virginia to the West Coast to California, seeing national parks along the way. I had no idea. I was 6 or 7 years old. I didn't know places like this even existed. I must have been a terrible traveling companion because I know that at the end of every trail, when we'd reach a point where we had to turn back, I usually would break down and cry because I wanted to keep going, see what was around the next curve.
Wow.
But I've had a chance to get back to a bunch of those places and see for myself. And I tell you, there just aren't words. I mean, we do our best. There are a lot of words in this book. There are not words to describe some of the places you see, the wonder and the beauty, the scale, the wildlife. Our parks are just beyond belief.
Well, we began with the first national park, Ford. Let's end with the newest national park, one that I don't know if I was familiar with, Pinnacles in California.
That's right. Pinnacles is a park that was created as a consequence of a mix of the volcanic activity out there and then the shearing that's going on right along the edge of the continent. California has more national parks than any other state, even Alaska. Alaska has 8. California has 9 of them, and Pinnacles is the newest. It had been set aside, protected as a national monument for years. Many parks start out that way. You know, it's very tough to get, this will probably come as news to you, it's tough to get something through Congress. Tough to get everyone to agree on something. But I'm grateful that the Antiquities Act allows the president to set aside a place if it's of importance, if it's of value, as a national monument. Many of those national monuments have gone on to become national parks. That's how the Grand Canyon started out for many years before Congress could even agree that the greatest canyon, the most beautiful canyon on the face of our planet, ought to be a national park. The president was able to set it aside, say, we're going to protect that until Congress makes up its mind. And Pinnacles had been set aside in that way. And then finally, a bill was passed, and the president signed it. It became a new national park. And there are these incredible alcoves. The rocks have formed and then fallen in such a way that you have all these little kind of like natural caves, natural homes in this really extraordinary landscape in the middle of California. And that's Pinnacles National Park.
Well, Ford, thank you very much for your time, and thanks for, making me want to go back to a national park real soon. So thank you, Ford.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show.
Ford Cochran is Director of Programming for National Geographic Expeditions. You can learn more about the National Geographic Guide to National Parks of the United States 8th Edition and the National Geographic Kids National Parks Guide USA Centennial Edition with the most amazing sights, scenes, and cool activities from coast to coast as we celebrate 100 years of the National Park Service here in 2016. This is The Book Club at 91.7.